And we'll see you back. Get your resubmittals in. We'll see you back on September 1st.
Thank you, everyone.
We really appreciate it. We really appreciate everybody's help and attention to the matter. And we look forward to seeing you September 1st. Thank you, everybody.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hiller. We will now move to item 3, PR 2021-5740, site plan amendment 2021-1051 for Daniel Chavez at 4720 Alexander Boulevard. Good morning, Mr. Anderson. Please state your name, address, and I will swear you in.
Good morning. This is Scott Anderson, 4419 4th Street Northwest, Suite B, Albuquerque, New Mexico. I am the agent for Daniel Chavez, owner of the property.
Do you swear affirm to tell the truth?
I do.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead and this says deferred. I guess we did talk about this last week.
It was a deferral last week.
Well, we didn't talk about reasons. It, right?
Okay. Yeah, it was never heard. The deferral was requested prior to the hearing, but just a quick overview of what the project is. There are two things that are triggering a need for DRP in this instance. The first being the dollar amount of capital investment exceeds $500,000, and that triggers the need for major site plan amendment. The second item is that we are increasing the height of the previously approved project, which was done in the 90s, to include a fly loft for a performance space that is intended to be placed in this redeveloped big box retail structure.
Okay, thank you. Is there anything else you want to add? Like one thing that might be helpful is just to talk about what will be happening in this new space.
Certainly. Well, one thing I do want to make everyone aware is that we are not proposing any changes to the site plan. We're barely doing a vertical improvement. So we're maintaining the existing site conditions as they stand now and upgrade them in the future. There is leased parking because the parking demand for this facility is greater than what the DRB requires for one, and then secondly, it is greater than what the original retail was. So the owner has leased additional parking from surrounding property owners. So I want to make everybody aware of that as well. So this space is intended for events and performances. The owner of the property currently has a piano bar and other musical entertainment in the facility currently. And this is to increase the size of the concerts that he would be having in the future and hopefully bring in additional musical acts in addition to other performances. The versatility of the space would allow for indoor sporting events of various natures, such as boxing or mixed martial arts.
Okay. So, Mr. Anderson, so the seating area, or maybe it's standing area, potentially would increase with this addition, because the second story that you're putting in place, or the height increase, can you just describe what that specific space would be used for?
It's a fly loft. So whenever concerts and other performances occur in any venue, but in this venue specifically, we place the performer on a stage, for viewing angles, audience members. And as part of any performance, there's theatrical lighting and there is sound equipment that is suspended above the performers. And so if that equipment requires certain clearances around it, and it requires access for technicians to install motors, install controllers for lighting and sounds. So the lighting and sound is what is actually being placed in the elevated space. You know, to get angles for spotlights, for example, you need a certain distance away from the performer in front of them, so into the audience, that would then shine onto the stage to highlight, you know, what's happening on the stage, be it musical performance, theatrical performance, whatnot. And then for acoustic reasons, we also want to elevate speakers behind performers so they project out into the audience. The current height of the building allows us really good viewing angles, and it provides for the ability to install a mezzanine or tiered seating inside the venue. But the actual elevation of the roof is exclusively for, there's no seating in this area. It's exclusively for the theatric and acoustic elements of the
performance. Okay, thank you. I think that's really helpful for people to know as they evaluate this request. Is there any member of the, and I'm sorry, Mr. Anderson, is there anyone else from your applicant team that wishes to speak?
The only other person that may be speaking, and we perhaps could come to this later, but I have been in contact with the, I'm not sure what the proper term would be, but the Renaissance Center, we have to get architectural approval from them as part of this request. Ron Bohannon is their technical staff, and he has communicated to me that they, from a technical standpoint, have no objection to the project, but the letter has not been received from the official, person that the letter must come from. So technical staff has approved it, but not Mr. Trump has not yet sent his approval letter over, but it is forthcoming, according to Mr. Bohannon, but if we need to, we can hear testimony.
Okay, Mr. Bohannon, let's go ahead and have you state your name, firm, affiliation with this application, and I'll swear you in.
Sure. Ron Bohannon, 5571 Midway Park Place, a member of the Architectural Review Committee, and we review all the technical aspects of the master plan and CC&Rs within the Renaissance Center.
Do you swear firm to tell the truth?
I do.
Okay.
Madam Chair, thank you, Ron Bohannon. We have reviewed the application. It does meet all of the master plan requirements as well as all the CC&Rs that are applicable to the site, and find that it's in compliance with both. The letter that Mr. Trump is signing is forthcoming and it's been approved. It's just in transition. Be happy to answer any other questions the board might have.
Okay. And I think we'll just wait and get into that with a little bit with code enforcement and planning comments. So thank you for that. Is there any member of the public wishing to speak on item 3 at 4720 Alexander Boulevard? And you can raise your hand in Zoom under the reactions bar, or press *9 if you're on audio, or just raise your hand in your video. Okay, I'm not seeing anyone, so let's go to Water Authority for comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Blaine Carter for the Water Authority. There's been two availability statement requests for this project. 210714 was the earliest one, and 210816 is the latest one. Those are in review. We will require issuance of one of those prior to approval. The site plan amendment, I think the only real issue we see at this time was the Fire One plan. Was a little confusing in terms of the fire flow initially. That's been revised and resubmitted to us, so we'll be looking at that when we review the statement. Don't have any other questions at this time. Thank you.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Carter?
This is Scott Anderson, none at this time.
Code enforcement.
Good morning, Ms. Montano, code enforcement. The only concerns I had with this was the LED signage that you had on each facade of that. I wanted you to correlate that to the master plan. to see how you met each and every one of the criteria. It is limited to percentage and to street frontages. I didn't see that on your drawings.
This is Scott Anderson. Thank you, Mr. Montagna. We will provide those calculations.
Thank you.
Parks and Recreation.
Charles Summerfield with Parks and Recreation. Our comments were just that it's not clear whether you're going to then go back to the original landscape plan and reinstall some of the trees that are dead.
This is Scott Anderson. The intent was to restore the original landscaping for the original approved landscape plan with a couple of minor exceptions. There were never plant materials installed on the east facade of the building. So I wanted to get direction from the board. We can have a landscape architect provide a new landscape plan, but the original plan, which was presented on the previous sheet, as you'll note, it is indicating plant materials on that east facade, but the owner is happy to, you know, replace any damage landscaping that was shown on the original plan that is there, and we're happy to compensate anything on the east facade at other locations within the site. Because this is a redeveloped site, you know, we would, you know, look for some collaboration or cooperation so that we don't have to tear into existing curbs and paved areas to accommodate additional landscaping. But I think that that's something we can work out in the next semester.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Anderson. Let's go to hydrology.
Ernest Armijo, hydrology. Hydrology has no objection.
Transportation.
Good morning, this is Jane Wolfenberger with transportation. In the future, if the seating does change, just keep in mind at that time that would trigger a site plan review, which would include all, you know, all new parking requirements per the IDO, along with going through the traffic circulation layout list and making sure everything is in place, including updated sidewalk improvements. If by any chance the landscaping should be updated around the accessways with the new landscape plan, I would like to see some clear sight triangles in that regard, and also take into account intersection sight triangle for sight distance purposes. Thank you.
This is Chair Wolfley. So I have a question, Mr. Anderson. Has your seating increased? It sounds like it potentially has increased since you were last approved for this change of use.
Madam Chair, so the overall occupant load of the building increases significantly with this application, and that's what triggered the need for additional off-site parking in addition to what is provided on-site. That's where, you know, again, we're hoping, because this is a redevelopment project, as much of the existing infrastructure in place as possible to, you know, minimize site impact, you know, to this property. And then the additional parking, this was part of my submittal, is the least access parking at, you know, around the around adjoining properties to this site.
Okay, so Ms. Wolfenberger, you've been able to identify the parking needs are met, is that correct?
This is Jean with transportation. Based on this application, I have no further comments.
Okay.
On this.
Okay.
Just to keep in mind for future, if, you know, for a future expansion, then that site plan review would be treated.
Okay. Let's go to planning comments.
This is Jay Rodenbeck. we need to note, you need to note in a comment response letter how how the facade design requirements of 511E2 of the IDO are being met. And we'll just note, I mean, this has been talked about, but that the addition is not architecturally integrated with the rest of the building. We had a comment about signage. We need you to demonstrate how the signage standards are being met for those LED signs that was already talked about by code enforcement. And Parks and Rec already talked about the landscaping and how the existing landscaping on the site needs to meet the IDO requirements. You need to show that. And I believe that concludes our comments, with the exception that I need to add a comment that you need to add the project number and the application numbers to the site plan sheet. And I note that you got your solid waste signature. So we're good on that. That concludes my comments.
Madam Chair, can I just ask a question really quick?
Go ahead, Ms. Sommerfeld.
So looking at the original landscaping plan, which was 90 from 95, it does not appear there were street trees, which would be required now. So my question would be, you know, are they required to go back to this original plan, or are they required to do everything up to new standards? That would be my assumption, is that given the investment, they would be required to do a new one.
Okay, Ms. Gould.
So this is Maggie Gould. So there's a provision in the landscaping plan that says when you make changes, or, you know, when you do a new building or you do remodeling, the value of which is over $500,000, that does trigger landscaping compliance with the IDO. So I think in this case, we need to kind of look, you know, like Mr. Anderson was saying, you know, can we try to figure out a way through this plan that minimizes disturbance to the site? And I think that's partially a question for code enforcement. So I think we can look at what's there. And then does this, are the streets within the site public or private? Like what, I mean, so there's frontage along Montaño, and then is Desert Circle, so Alexandra and Montaño look like they are public streets. Is Desert Surf Circle also?
Madam Chair, this is Scott Anderson. I do believe that Desert Surf Circle is public street.
Okay.
The requirement for street trees are on streets that are above local. So I don't, although that's great if they install them, but I don't believe they'd be required for the IDO.
Cheryl, can you get slightly closer to your mic?
Oh, sorry. Can you hear now?
That's better.
This is Cheryl Summerfield. So the requirement would be for street trees to be on streets above local, and I don't believe Desert Surf Circle meets that requirement, although of course it would be great if they had them. But Montaño is more my concern, and because, you know, it is such a prominent street, and it does appear in their original landscape plan that they didn't put trees in that location. So I'm not sure if there's some type of conflict. But I guess that's what you were speaking of, if, you know, if there would be a conflict there on Montaño with installing new trees.
This is Chair Wolfley. I just wanted to ask this question with regard to Montaño. Doesn't Montaño elevate above the site here, Mr. Anderson?
Madam Chair, this is Scott Anderson.
Anything.
Yeah. This is Scott Anderson. Alexander passes below Montaño Boulevard, and the subject property is at the same elevation, and access is off of Alexander and Desert Surf. So this isn't an exact number, but I believe that Montaño is between, say, 18 and 24 feet above finished floor of this property.
Ms. Sommerfeld, how does that affect your recommendations on meeting street tree ordinance.
This is Cheryl Sommerfeld with Parks and Rec. I don't think there's any provision for that. You know, I think that since that's such a special circumstance, so if they choose not to put in trees, they may have to do the alternative landscape plan. So I think that's also, you know, a planning department question as to what is required based on IDO regulations.
Madam Chair, this is Maggie Gold. Oh, sorry, go ahead. No, I was just going to say, it sounds like maybe planning and code enforcement and the applicant need to kind of sit down and look at the existing plan and what needs to happen. I'm also I just pulled this up in our AGIS system, and it looks like there are trees along Alexander.
Okay. So with regard to the landscaping, I think the conversation just kind of needs to sort out. I want to go back to a couple items, but first I want to ask Mr. Biazar to speak.
Yeah, Madam Chair, this is Shahab Biazar. Scott, you said that your parking requirement increased, and is that true?
This is Scott Anderson. Yes, the property was originally developed as big box retail.
Yes.
And so with the change of use, there is an increase in the overall required parking from both an IDO standpoint, but also from a pragmatic standpoint, that to operate a concert venue, we need to be able to accommodate guests in excess of what the current parking lot holds. And that's what necessitated the need for the property owner to lease additional parking adjacent to the site to the south.
So so you submitted that lease agreement to us.
It should have been included in the packet, and if it was not, I'm happy to provide a supplemental showing the lease agreements with.
So my other question is that the amount of spaces that you are leasing, is that excess parking on the adjacent property? Because they still have to meet their parking requirement, and the parking that they're leasing has to be excess amount.
This is Scott Anderson. In excess to what the adjoining property owners have, is that what you're asking?
Yes. So your adjacent, this is Shahab Biazar. So adjacent property owner has to meet, I mean, his parking requirement, and then whatever is excess, anything above his parking requirement, then that's what it could be used as a leased parking space.
Okay. This is Scott Anderson. It's my understanding that the properties are exclusively used as parking, but I can get clarification on that. The other item of note is that the adjoining properties are not hospitality venues, it's office use. And so that there would be, you know, different hours of operation for those parking lots, so that, you know, the concerts, I wouldn't say 100% of the time, but 99% of the time occur in the evening when those parking spaces would be vacant. But I think that there's mention of that in the lease agreements that were included in the application.
Sure, that's fine. So I just had a question for code enforcement. Do we need a lease agreement, or do we need a shared parking agreement, or either one would work?
This is Vince Montano, code enforcement. I think a shared parking agreement, but I'd have to check with the code compliance manager just to confirm that.
The only reason I'm asking this, because if for some reason that lease goes away, I mean, there's no way of us controlling that. We need something that is more controllable, like something that will stay in effect indefinitely.
This is Scott Anderson. The current use of the building has changed. There are existing bars and restaurants in the facility. As part of accommodating the the parking, there were previous building permits pulled, and we had PRT with staff, all of whom are now retired, but it was approved, this off-site parking at that time. And so this is just a continuation of use of that parking, but it was prior approved during the building permit process.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, and yeah, and we probably just need to circle back with while we're here doing this, and this addition could potentially, you know, attract more guests to your facilities. We just need to cross-check the parking requirements on this and make sure that we're there and we have the right parking, shared parking agreement in place. So that's something that we can be doing as well. Mr. Rodenbeck, can you zoom in on that bottom elevation, the one on the bottom that shows the front of the building? Okay. So I guess this question is probably for Mr. Bohannon and Mr. Anderson. When we were reviewing this prior to today's meeting, it just sort of begs the question of the kind of architectural integrity of this building with just a square box added on top with no architectural elements. You've kind of kept the roof line, but sometimes, you know, we add something to a building that's already there for functional purposes without kind of realizing how over the life of the building it might look and be usable to any future users. So we've asked you to kind of double check the facade requirements related to this area. I know the Architectural Review Committee is looking at this, but can you see what I'm seeing, that maybe this doesn't add or enhance the aesthetics of this building?
Madam Chair, this is Scott Anderson. So we're dealing with a big box retail store, which, it had a certain function during its lifetime. The current owner has, done a lot to improve, at least in my opinion, improve the facade of the structure. This addition, while it would not necessarily enhance the aesthetics of a big box retail space, I also don't think it tracks from the existing architecture of the space. And, we're trying to match it with color. Matching with material is a different technical challenge, in that the existing structure is split-faced concrete block, and to create a fly loft over existing structure with that additional weight and material property is an extreme challenge and an expensive one to address. So again, we're trying to do it with color, trying to do it with signage, but signage has certain limitations. I will also say that building elevations probably do not, it's a technical drawing that's required as part of the submittal, but it probably does not also express how this functions in reality. It's best viewed from a three-dimensional standpoint, because these drawings look awfully flat. It actually creates more dimensionality to the building, which is something that has been indicated by this board that they're looking for. So, we were also constrained by colors and materials within the restrictions of the Architectural Control Committee of Renaissance. So I would certainly welcome any ideas, but the nature of a fly loft is that, it's a box to hold technical equipment. In the future, if this property is redeveloped for another use, it would be, I think, a benefit to an industrial user to have an elevated space that's capable of suspending equipment from, those sorts of issues. So I think it would help in the long term for redevelopment, you know, should
fire. Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Mr. Bohannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ron Bohannon. Jay, if you could scroll back up just a tad bit to show the elevation in relation to the site plan. The Architectural Review Committee did take that into account. What's not shown here is that the actual improvement is set back from the street, the frontages of the boxes. So when you look at if you were to plot a street view cross section, this element is mostly hidden. It's not really, the elevations show it as a prominent element, and in reality, it's set back. And so we did look at that and take that into account, and we felt like with the materials and the color schemes that it would actually provide a little bit of vertical element, as Scott has tried to articulate a little bit. So we did take that into account. We didn't think it needed to go to the level of relief that you would normally see on the main facade of each of the two primary facades, which are along Desert Surf Circle and Alexander. And so that's how we looked at the review.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bohannon. That's super helpful. And I'm just curious, how far is it set back on average from the building edge?
This is Scott Anderson. The structural bays, it's a nominal 40 feet. So beginning with structural bay between A and B, 40 feet, 80 feet, 120 feet. So we're about 130 feet, and that's a very round number from Alexander that this sets back. And okay. Then it is flush on a portion of the facade that is north facing Alexander Boulevard.
Okay, so I'm sorry, I got a distraction. I'm sorry, is it flush with the facade on Alexander or Desert, sir?
No.
No.
This is okay. Scott Anderson. No, Madam Chair, it is not.
Okay, all right. I think that kind of resolves some of my questions that I had. Okay, so I think we're looking to defer this to there's kind of a smattering of things that need to be done. Do you have a date in mind, Mr. Anderson?
Yeah, Madam Chair, this is Scott Anderson. I would like a deferral to September 1st hearing. I think that would be the most appropriate time to resolve the outstanding issues.
Okay. Thank you. Is there a motion to defer item 3 to September 1st?
Blaine Carter, Water Authority, so moved.
Joe Sommerfeld, Parsonage, seconds.
Please vote.
Blaine Carter, Water Authority, I approve.
That's Antonio, Code Enforcement, I approve.
Joe Sommerfeld, Parks and Rec, I approve.
Mr. Mijo, Hydrology, I approve.
Jean Wolfenberger with Transportation, I approve.
And Jolene Wolfley, DRB Chair, approves. There is a consensus vote of the DRB to defer item 3, PR 2021-5740, application 2021-1051 to September 1st.